User entered your channel. User entered your channel. User entered your channel.
I'm going to wait until about 2 minutes after, so let's just give it a few more minutes to let people join in.
Hey, Patrick, this is Ido. I was just clicking on the link that says update for Nicholas Leroy, and it doesn't lead to any document.
Thanks, Ido. We'll get that fixed momentarily.
User entered your channel. User entered your channel.
Ido, I just put the link in the chat window. I just checked the link. Could you check if it's working? At least for me, I can see it's working.
Okay, it's working now.
Okay, thank you. I think it was just before we put in the public error. So sorry for that.
Microphone activated. There is a question if the recording will be publicly available. I'm happy to post an MP3 on the at the bottom of the agenda page, for instance. User entered your
channel. Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, Peter. I had at least one person contact me to ask for it, so I was just going to have us do that.
Okay, I'll do that after the call.
Dottorato.
Please mute.
Could people mute if they are not speaking? At least we have 8% open.
Please mute your line. Could you please mute your line?
Get Andrea Potenti, who needs to mute.
Thank you.
Okay, I think please keep your line muted unless you need to ask a question. We'll proceed near the end to take questions. We'll do them by hand up in the chat, so please do organize to do that. Let's then get ourselves started. So this is just, we're trying to do a monthly update, and so please mute. Eleonora.
User entered your channel.
Could you please mute?
User disconnected. Thank you. From your channel.
So we're trying to do a monthly update just to catch up and let you know where things are and give you updates on various things that we're learning as we go through the run. So let's kick off the meeting right away with Nicola Leroy, who's going to tell us just the sort of status of the run and the run planning. Nicola?
Thank you very much, Patrick. Yes, so I let people open the link. Let me put it again.
User entered your channel.
So I just put again the link in the chat window. People were still looking. So yeah, the idea just to present you only a few slides on the status of the networks compared to what was already discussed at the previous call. So if you go to the second slide, the broad pictures is here. You can see that instrumentators are performing quite well. They're just a bit okay. The horizon set the wrench, the average angle or wrench, you can see on the figure versus time since the beginning of the run. So the sensitivity of the telescopes are almost stable and performing quite well at the moment. We have small commissioning breaks happened and will continue to happen in the future to fix problems that we have observed and that could impact stability or sensitivity of the instrumentators. Just try to get the best instrumentators as we can without okay, just doing too much downtime. So at the moment, we continue to keep the schedule we announced. Yeah, Leo. Patrick, could I leave you or Peter just to answer on the chat window? Thank you.
User in your channel is reporting.
Okay, so the schedule is okay. Admins during downtime is that we have Tuesday maintenance for the user different files that we continue to give here. The calibrations is also done the day after the maintenance, just to be sure that we have good performance of the instruments when we are performing the calibrations. And the main idea for this different stat is to always have at least one instrument to remain online at any given time. And if you move to the sub slide, which you can see the duty cycle for the network and for the different types of methods, you can see that just at least we have something 1.4% of the time with no interferometers, so which is very low bedtime for the at least just to be able to detect things. And if you are looking only the possibility just to have sky localization, so at least two interferometers, you get something that 78% of the times where you have at least two interferometers. So you can see result for H1, L1, and V1, where we have something like at least 70% or close to 70% of the times in observing mode for all the instruments, up to 86% for on the data side. So moving to the last slide, which is the conclusions. So we have quite good performance of the networks, and this is a very good achievement with at least 78% of the times where we could have at least work sky localizations if you have only 200 parameters. The number of alerts is growing and will be discussed later in the call. So that's something which is very interesting, I think, for everybody. And we just want, on the instrument side, mention that we may have a longer break during autumn. This is still under discussions, and we'll keep you informed with when we'll have better idea of when and how long could this break happen. That's it. And yes, thanks, Brian. Just to reply to Ido, yes, the different numbers we are giving here are integrated since 1st of April.
Microphone activated. I have a kind of a follow-up question on that. Is this something, so there's a network status that kind of gives a web page that gives a snapshot for any given day. Is there a plan to put something like this, like a live kind of accumulated update of the cycles and...
I think that's something we discussed about that. Patrick, do you want to mention that?
Yeah, well, I think, there is a page that has some statistics about the what we call a summary page. But I think as we've been starting the run, the people that maintain it, it hasn't been fully stable. So what we hope to do is actually stabilize that and make it available. There's also a plan which is not yet mature to make available a sort of a way to query for historical state, but that isn't ready yet, but it will be coming soon. Ariel, could you mute your line, hard mute your line using the button?
Trying to. Sorry about that.
Okay. It's usually the third button from the left at the top of the menu, the one that's just got the little speaker on it. Ido, does that help you?
Yes, thank you.
Great. And we will advertise that other summary page as soon as it stabilizes. We haven't advertised it broadly because it hasn't been fully stable yet.
Yeah, just maybe to answer to David Williams' questions. This is also under discussions if we do a break, if we postpone the end of the run or not. I would say when we take the decision, we'll take the decision for both things, which is, okay, duration of the breaks and if we continue the run after. At the moment, it's go more for just maybe a prolongation, but nothing is sure at the moment.
Any other general questions or comments about the run generally? Okay, in that case, let's move on. And the next person who's going to give us an update is Eric Katsunidis. He's just going to give us an overview of the low latency alert so far. Eric?
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
All right, can I also take the opportunity to check with the phone bridge? If people on the phone line can hear me and the rest of the call, okay?
Yep, I can hear you great, Eric.
All right, thank you. All right, so let's see. Yes, we're going to be giving you where we stand on the May report, if you wish, of public alerts from LIGO and Virgo. We start here with a web page that I'm pretty sure you're now well familiar with, which is the public the public page of our GRACEDB, the Gravitational Wave Event Database. You could see something like 15 entries over here, and they reflect the outcome out of transient searches, both model and unmodeled ones, that have been running since the start of O3 and also a little bit before, over the month or so leading into O3. And the probably the two-line summary here is that, first of all, the pipelines are robust enough to identify candidates and identify public alerts based on the false alarm criteria that we've set. And overall, the background estimation out of these methods seems to be reasonably stable. If we break down now out of those 15 entries, the very first one was the result of a human error, and of course we immediately retracted it. And there has been one another event that was not a human error, but it was after we examined it, and I'll say a few words about that further down the road. It was attributed to noise and it was retracted. So based on that, there are 13 events that remain of interest. If you sum up the P terrestrial that is associated with those 13 events, I came up with something like 0.9 out of 13 events that, as I said, remain of interest. This is ballpark within the 10% contamination that we set out to achieve with this run and the public alerts associated with that. Slide number three. Basically gives a little bit of the inner work, the status on the inner workings of that system. And as we already discussed about a month ago, we started off and we actually continue to encounter additional technical issues that until recently prevented to send automatic GCN notices. So trying to identify a few things here of what's happening, although I'm sure many of you are familiar by now, is first of all, we have several pipelines, several searches rather, that are operating, and there are multiple searches, both for unmodeled as well as modeled searches. Moreover, those pipelines, they do not, the way that they place the templates and the way they break down this, the signal parameter space result to, at the end of the day, tenths of events user landing to GRACEDB and having to be processed. So there are some timing issues, race conditions, and overall stability that results from that arrival of all the events very user close in time, channel, as well as the additional analysis tasks that need to be performed before a complete event user profile is built and sent out. So we have had such quite complex, and didn't have exactly the opportunity to test them and study them in previous occasions. So this is what we find. This is what we found over these 2 months of data. In all cases, the system, the entry system, is continued, is monitored, and there is human intervention that basically is ready within a minute or so in order to process those events manually if need be. User on slide four now, I'm gonna start discussing a little bit about some of those events, starting out with the first automated GCN notice that was generated for that event on May 18th. That event, the GCN, went out within 5 minutes. This is, as we operate now, this is more or less by design. It is namely that 5 minute, if you wish, latency. But the rapid response team, as it convened and examined the event, within a matter of roughly 30 minutes, we sent a retraction because that manual inspection indicated that the HSM instrument displayed noise over some tenths of seconds before the merger time, and on the basis of which we retracted it. There were the two most recent events of the of May 21st were also generated also these automated GCN notices. They were vanilla BB8s. The next slide, slide five, that is, addresses some of the update material that we have made available and we continue to make available for past and future events. And this, of course, has to do with sky maps as well as classification. And I picked two of those events. One is the 0510G, an event for which the P Astro sifted quite a bit from the original, the one that came out in the first place. It went through one update and then another update that reduced it to 42% for the probability of the system being a binary neutron star. The 0426C was another event that was updated. Now, the P Astro for this event was updated using P samples. And this is these are the two events for which we have made I think significant updates over the course of this month. On slide six, this is the publication plans for the collaboration. As you know by now, we overall split around to 03A and 03B. And we expect to have paper releases on the second and fourth quarter of 2020 over two broad areas that we anticipate. I'll start with the general catalogs and companion astrophysics papers that we expect to have for the first part of 03 over the second quarter of 2020, and then the second part of 03 on the fourth quarter of 2020. And that is gonna include the general compact binary system catalog, papers on testing of GR, HNET measurement, the characterization of astrophysical distribution, as well as follow-up of GRB events. Now, the second class of papers is going to address potentially exceptional events, and the nominal plan of that is to have those papers out within 4 months after detection, and exceptional events will qualify, for example, an NSBH detection, or parameters for systems that are outside previously observed region, for example, measurements of high spins or precession and large mass ratio or other aspects of the component masses. I'll move on to slide seven, which should be the last one, mostly to identify at least two areas that are in the, that are in the works. One has to do with commissioning in a production, at the production level, the processing of single interferometer triggers in order to create public alerts, as well as automating the process of looking for coincidences, including both single interferometer as well, of course, multi-interferometer events within LIGO and Virgo, to create automated alerts starting from external triggers, and this is still in the works. As usual, the LIGO Virgo user guide that describes how the system is built and runs is a good point to start. And I'll note here, Leo Singer distributed a new version of that last night. And of course, we welcome and rely on your feedback related to this and the overall program that we have. And of course, the mailing list is linked here for anyone who hasn't joined that already. I'll stop here.
Thanks, Eric. Dave Sand has asked, are there any exceptional event papers currently being written? Dave, the answer is we are working on one related to the event, which is, and I was just looking it up in the public Grace TV. It's 190425Z. That was the one that was classified by RP Astro as greater than 99% BNS. And so we've started working towards an exceptional publication on that.
User entered your channel.
Okay. All right. Any other questions related to those events? We're going. Well, perhaps let's take a hang on a second.
We have a question. We have a question from
Ido. Let's take Ido's first. Ido had a question online. His question is, any update on 190426C in terms of both VAR and various P-Astro values for different configurations? The so Ido, no, we don't have any updates on that at the present time. You know, as you look at the events, I'm trying to pull it up just for a moment. Actually, can I ask whoever, I think it's Eric, can you mute? Thanks, just for a second. So let's see, let's take a look at 26C. So what you've got there so far is more or less what we know. It is not in our list at the present time of writing an exceptional paper about. And until we get the offline runs done, I think we won't be able to give more information about the nature of that event. As soon as we do get those offline runs completed, if there's sort of an update that's available at that time, we'll put it into GraceDB and make it available. But that's a timescale of even from now, it's probably several months before we'll have that, judging about readiness of calibrated data and other things. And next question. What happened to 190510G to drop to 42%? So we had hoped to give a bit of an update on that one. Let me make sure it's the one I'm thinking of. We had hoped to give an update today on that to give you a sense of the timescales and the various things that occurs. But unfortunately, the person that was going to give the technical update and could have done the best job on it, I couldn't make it to the call. So 190510G, as you know, the false alarm rate evolved and the P-Astro evolved rather quickly over a little bit of time. The basic situation there, and the next talk will give you another sense of why this is in terms of the data that we use and take. That the reported first VAR and P-Astro were based on repeated experiments of the kind of data that had been acquired up until the moment that the event was received. But over the 24 hours that followed, there was some weak evidence that there was a change in the stationarity of the noise and the non-stationarity, I should say, of the noise at the time of the event. And so the team tried to accumulate some extra data, took the extra data from after the event and about a day either side, and used that to reevaluate the false alarm rate and the P-Astros. And that's what led to the update, namely that when considered within an experiment, that it was data taken around the time of the event with a couple of days either side, it was less significant than it was within the experiment that was equivalent to the one leading up until the moment of the alert. So this is a subtlety of trying to do low latency analyses with data where it is highly non-stationary. Let me take a moment and go back to the phone line. There are other questions here as well. Let's see if we can get to them. But let's go to the phone line first and then flip back.
Yeah, so this is Mandy. This is a follow-up directly on that. Eric mentioned that there were some changes over the last couple of weeks in the pipeline due to that, because of course that was pretty significant for us, that it went down from 98 to 42%. Could you, I know that details person is not there today, but could you mention a few of those changes because of that event?
Well, let me try again. So within that change, it was less about the for that particular event, which is 1905-10G, it was less about changes in code than it was about the change in the nature of the data. And so it was after reassessing the background probability, so the false alarm rate, using data that we acquired after the event was found, that led to the largest change in that probability. So this is a subtlety both of, well, it's just one of the difficulties of the fact that these instruments have a lot of times when non-stationarity creeps in, and we have good ways to handle it and monitor it, but we can't always produce an estimate of the false alarm rate that takes that into account if you have a change in the stationarity that occurs during the run. So this is more about the data than it is, that change is more about the data than it is about any changes in the pipeline.
So let me ask it another way. I think I'm hearing you say that there haven't been any, like, that could easily happen again. I mean, and I understand that it would, but there haven't been any pipeline changes that would, like, have changed that the way that event was analyzed that day.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the key thing to note is we're still getting all the pieces in place. And one of the things that we had to do was manually update that event by people basically getting together and setting up the runs and doing the analysis that evening. But we're going to be getting into a routine method whereby basically it may not be 24 hours, but every 48, maybe even 72 hours or so, we will actually run a re-estimate of the background using data acquired after the candidates to just check that those things remain stable after the data. So that's something that's coming in the future. Okay. Let me see. I tell you, first of all, I'm going to have to come back to the questions in the window. Perfect. Perfect segue. Juan Garcia Bellido asked about 1905-18BB. And so Brian O'Reilly is going to give a presentation discussing that and the processes that we use in order to try and get retractions out quickly. Brian, do you want to pick that up? Brian, I can't hear you. Can other people hear Brian? Is it just me?
Microphone. Nope, activated. Can't hear Brian either.
Microphone muted. Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
All right. Sorry about that. All right. Patrick asked me to give a short presentation on the retraction for S1905-18BB to give you an idea of the process that we go through. So hopefully everybody has the talk pulled up. The three run coordinators I've listed here, Keita at Hanford, myself at Livingston, and Alessio at Virgo, manage this process. So if you go to slide two, the process is we have a rapid response team that's designed to react quickly to gravitational wave candidates found by the low latency search pipelines. And the composition is a advocate from each site, typically, at least in these early stages, the run coordinator, although we may, we will for a long run like this train up backups, an advocate from the low latency group, that knows that low latency pipeline and procedures. Detector characterization experts. This is the group within the collaborations that looks at instrumental noise and how it affects the data. And so detector characterization experts from the LSE and Virgo, and those are on an on-call rota to respond to these events. At least one expert from the pipeline of the preferred event, and an expert from for the code that goes into the database, and then the on-shift operators at each site are part of this. So on slide three, this is a flowchart, and I've highlighted the left side of this, because this is our this is our vision of how things will go for many of our events. If we get what we call now a vanilla BBH event that are expected to be quite common, we'll handle this in a fairly expedited way and perhaps without calling a full rapid response team and generate an initial notice and circular. And then within 24 hours, we'll have a call at a more civilized time, typically 1500 UTC, to discuss the trigger and whether anything needs to be done in follow-up. So the way we get to that point in what we would say regular business is that we have the preliminary notice automatically generated, and you just heard from Eric that we've had teething issues with that process. It's a multi-interferometer event. It's a binary black hole, classified as a binary black hole, and then a not the full rapid response team, but the, and I say EM here, it's probably, this is the low latency advocate and the detector, the debt car advocate, and typically one of the run coordinators will discuss this, and if they agree, they'll send an initial notice and a circular. On slide 4, this is where we've been for many of the events so far in the run. Either the automatic notice fails or there's other extraordinary cases, including a couple of lead-ins from that left-hand path where it's not classified as a BBH or it's not a multi-interferometer event. And so typically everybody has signed up to automatic alerts, but we basically assemble the full rapid response team to have a discussion. And if we decide everything looks okay, then we generate the initial notice and circular. We also will generate the preliminary notice if it's stalled somewhere in the pipeline by intervention from experts on that. and that gets us to an initial notice and circular, and then we will again discuss these events typically the next day. Many of our events happen at night because that's when we get a lot of quiet observation time at local night at the observatories. And then slide 5, which is what I'm going to discuss here. So if we decide that there is a problem with the event and a preliminary notice has been sent, then we'll issue a retraction notice and a circular. If the notice hasn't been sent and we decide that it shouldn't be sent, then we just defer the discussion to the semi-regular call. And then everything else that isn't covered by this will typically go to that that regular call, semi-regular call. Okay, slide 6. So this semi-regular call, we have a time slot for every day. We don't use it because we don't always have an event to discuss. And if there's something non-controversial, then we don't always hold this meeting. If there is some item to discuss, the run coordinators decide whether to have this meeting or not. Okay, so slide 7. So the retraction of this event. So this event was seen by all three detectors. The preferred event was from the GST-LAL pipeline, and it was also detected by another pipeline, SPEAR. It was not seen by any other pipelines. The automatic preliminary notice was sent about 6 minutes after the event, and I've listed the some of the content of that notice here. So you can see the false alarm rate is not that impressive, and then the probability of a neutron star is basically 100%, or has remnant or probability of BNS. It also, though, has a high probability of being terrestrial. It's put in here as 24%. So the neutron star, we knew that the neutron star and remnant probabilities meant that this event could garner a lot of attention. So on slide 8, we had a meeting promptly after the event notification. We met to decide on whether to send an initial notice and circular or a retraction notice and circular. So There were some flags already for this event. One was that the Hanford instrument was the dominant contributor to the network signal to noise for ratio for the event. So Livingston and Hanford are typically very much aligned in terms of their antenna pattern. And so this is unusual, plus the Livingston sensitivity is slightly better than the Hanford sensitivity. So this was one unusual thing. And then we also saw noise in the Hanford strain channel starting about 20 seconds before the event. So the Dekar experts identified it as scattered light noise. That usually comes from some local seismic activity. And if you look on slide 9, this is a spectrogram of the event happened at t equals 0. And so, you know, you can see this large blob of noise, if you like, starting about 20 seconds before the event. Slide 10. So we discussed whether any of our data quality methods were effective in mitigating the noise, and we ran some quick tests. So we had pipeline experts, we had Dekar experts. We looked at various properties of the noise to try to evaluate what the effect was on the signal. And in the end, the pipeline and the Dekar experts agreed that the candidate should be retracted. So we sent a retraction notice about 38 minutes after the event. So 38 minutes after the event, about 32 minutes after the preliminary notice went out. And then slide 11. This is just the retraction circular. And you can see the low latency advocate sent this, Jeffrey Moe sent this retraction. We tell people that the trigger is no longer considered to be a gravitational wave signal, and that the data in LIGO Hanford was highly non-stationary leading up to the reported trigger time. So that spectrogram on slide 9 gives you one definition of what we mean by the noise being non-stationary or highly non-stationary. User in your channel timed out. And then, so on slide 9, so you cannot actually see the, if you're looking for a chirp trace, the signal to noise wouldn't have been high enough, I think, to have it be visible. But yes, it's below the noise. The end, if you like, of the event template is at t equals 0. Right, no clear chirp. I'm responding to Juan Garcia Belido's comments in the chat, by the way. Okay, and so then on slide 12, so of course, when we have something like this, the people continue to look at the data to try to understand what went on. And so one of our data quality people in the Dekar group found this unusual small magnitude seismic event on the Hanford detector. And the timing of this event, the t equals zero is a little bit different here, but this, well, actually it might be, I take that back. The timing is right. The axis on the bottom is in minutes, not in seconds. And so about 20 seconds before the event, just when this noise appeared in the Hanford detector, there was this, what I refer to as an unusual small magnitude seismic event. And the reason it's unusual is that it looks like an earthquake, but it would be a very close earthquake. And it appears in the higher frequency band. It appears in the 1 to 3 hertz band. Typically the earthquake noise happens below 0.1 hertz. Definitely below 0.3 hertz. So this was unusual. We didn't catch this right away during the discussion, but this is a clear explanation for why the noise was non-stationary at Hanford. Okay, and so that's, and the last thing I'll say is that, of course, investigations are ongoing. Any of these marginal events or somewhat events that raise questions like this do continue to be looked at up until we produce a catalog for the run. All right, that's all I have.
Thanks, Brian. Let's take questions directly related to this, and then we can loop back to Steve Schultz's comment. And so, Brian, Ido, actually, Ido, do you want to just say your question out loud?
Sure. So my question is whether the this particular event give you guys a sense that you might need to revise the threshold for false alarm rate alerts, or this kind of a unique failure mode that's unlikely to occur again. And the kind of the second part of it is, given that in this particular case, one detector dominated the signal to noise ratio, does it make sense to provide some sense of the individual detector false alarm rate or signal to noise ratio network one that's being provided now to kind of give a sense of, you know, whether this is a real detection or some noise event that might.
Brian, do you want to take the first part of that? I can try a second, or if someone else would like to volunteer on the second, please, but just we'll answer in the text chat. So Brian, do you want to take the first?
I don't consider that we would have to revise the FAR threshold. I think we've promised a purity of 90% for all of our alerts across all categories. So I think this is unusual, but I don't know that it requires any specific intervention of that sort right now.
User disconnected from your channel.
Thanks, Brian. Let me just add, and then I'm going to go to Leo, just again, talking to that one. People should remember that our our choice on the thresholds are that for non-retracted events, the contamination, so the fraction of the surviving things, about 10% will be background. That is based on the known rates, you know, what basically rate estimates of BNSs and of BBHs. It's clearly dominated by the BBHs and also the false alarm rate thresholds chosen. So you should be aware that even when you take the retracted things out, there's still that 10% of those things are, on average, our current estimates are that they will be background. So just bear that in mind. Leo, are you going to comment on the second question from Ido? Great, go for it.
Sorry, can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Oh, good. So this very question about whether the SNRs are consistent across detectors, we have a few different ways to actually quantify that. And one that I think was strongly indicative of this event being a glitch, but something that we don't, you know, actually, you know, take into account when we decide whether or not to send or reject an event is that we have a statistic that says how coherent the signal is across the network. And this is produced as a byproduct of the localization. And that's actually present in the FITS headers. And there's an entry called log BCI, which stands for log Bayes factor for coherence versus incoherence. And if it's positive, that means that the signal looks, you know, is coherent and, you know, or the candidate is coherent and looks like it could be a signal. And if it's negative, then that means it's incoherent and looks like it might be a glitch. And for this one, it was very, very negative. It was minus 10.
The one other thing, just to follow up on that comment and go back to Ido's second question as well, is that the FARs computed and reported most of the pipelines at this point do account for the single, the individual detector SNRs in the ranking. And so that's actually built into the FAR. And so at the moment, we don't have any indication that we need to go back on that. I think the message you're hearing is that at the moment, We still think we're doing reasonably well, but we just have to be aware of the fact that the non-stationarity can lead to certain things. Peter, do you want to comment on this as well?
Yeah, just to point out another part of that. I mean, it's a reminder that the preliminary alerts are just that, they're preliminary, they haven't been checked yet. And I just want to say, actually, you know, my expectation, I think a number of us thought there might be more preliminary alerts that then needed to be examined and retracted. Our experience during the O2 run was that the majority of things that passed our preliminary criteria, we handled internally. You know, we didn't send out preliminary alerts in O2, but we had lots of people who got up during the night and checked those out and said, yeah, this is an artifact and so on. So it's really a testament to the people who put the instrument together and maintain it that our data has been as clean as it is in terms of preliminary alerts usually panning out and checking out and leading to those initial notices and the initial circulars that you usually see. So if that's important to you all in terms of your usage of observing resources, do remember to make that distinction between the preliminary ones, which have some to be determined chance of being retracted, and the initial ones, which again are not guaranteed to be real, as Patrick explained, but those are the ones that we're aiming at the 90% purity level for. So hopefully the majority of them will be real, and it seems like that's working out more or less right so far.
Microphone muted.
Okay. I want to go back and take the other question. So the question from Steve Schultz is relevant. Let me start with the fact that we are continuing to review how we're interacting with the community and broadly. We're continuing to evolve things, although the timescale will be slow. So I think you shouldn't expect us to be, I don't think we anticipate any big changes in how we're interacting over the next months, but you know, over the next year, there could be. With regard to whether or not another pipeline is needed for this effort, there's already four pipelines running over the data, independently developed, many different approaches to doing things, and you know, I would say, I'm not even going to try to estimate how many person years of experience behind them. So I think it's not really the thinking that adding one more pipeline to the mix is going to really clean things up is not really something that we think is true, but we're going to keep an eye on that, and we're very excited about the work that's going on outside of the LIGO Virgo collaboration on the public data, and really want to continue to encourage that. Okay, so that's the second item. Now let me continue to go through with various other things. So Heinz Bernd Eggenstein had a question, but it looks like Brian answered it. And Kunal and also Eleonora. Yeah, so again, we're continuing to look at what information we're going to provide. At the moment, that's not on the list of things, but we will continue to sort of, you know, look at that and consider options as we go forward. But for right now, the list of things that we're providing is what we intend to do in low latency, and further information will be available at time of publication. But again, I do want to be clear, we do continue to take the feedback, and we are continuing to reassess and to always take a look at afresh at the various things we're doing, but no planned changes at the moment. Okay. All right. So that's the last of the.
There's a question on the phone bridge.
Okay, that's great. Go ahead.
Yeah. So just to get an overview. There's a preliminary alert and then an initial alert that's usually within something like I guess a half hour, and then the rapid response team and others review it, and then there may be retraction within a day. Is that sort of the rough structure, sort of three announcements?
Yeah, that's the rough structure, but I think rather than actually trying to say it verbally, the best thing to do is in the agenda item, you'll see a link to the public alerts user guide. Leo and a team of others have worked pretty hard to make information available there. And the sort of procedures are laid out, and especially the timeline. It does include, actually, let me make sure it's the timeline. Sorry, not the timeline. It's in one of the other places. So it's in the procedure section. You'll see what we are hoping in terms of the timescales. Now, we are still, due to technical issues, we're still a bit long to the preliminary alert. We're sort of still on the 5, 6, 7 minutes at the moment. But the thanks, Leo. You can see there that what the sort of sequence is expected to be. I think the one thing in that is it does indicate that the retraction could be sent sort of on the order of, you know, let's call it 6 hours, but it might actually be a bit longer than that.
That was helpful. Thank you.
Danielle, that's something. Could you, one of the things that's probably quite a nice place to give us that information, and it means it won't get lost, is a request like that, which is really only putting extra structured data into our notices, is something that we can consider, especially in the gap between O3A and O3B. We don't want to make changes to our formats on the fly during the run, at least as do it as rarely as possible. But there's a link both on the agenda and also if you go to the public alert guide, there's a way to that says how you can give us feedback. And if you provide the feedback that way, we'll make sure that it at least gets considered for the next round of possible changes to the data that we and how we put it out. Super, thank you. Any other questions on the phone bridge, Eric?
No, Patrick, you can continue.
Okay, well, that's our update, and thank you all for joining.
User disconnected from your channel.
Leo, go ahead.
User in your channel timed out. User disconnected from your channel.
Leo, we can't hear you if you're speaking.
Sorry, there was a discussion on the email list about best practices for GCN circular titles. Is that something we should discuss briefly here?
Well, I was figuring it was a pretty good discussion on list. If you'd like to say something to it, Leo, I think that's okay. It's clearly a community issue, and so it's fine to discuss. Yep.
Okay. Well, the suggestion was that instead of just having GCN circular titles, say, you know, LIGO Virgo S1509-14A, you know, deck cam observations, say, sorry, not picking on, just random telescope there. Also say, you know, in the title, whether there were any candidates found or any candidates rejected. And so there was a lot of, you know, support for this idea on the list. And there is a question about where is the best place to capture that sort of community best practices type of material. So I guess I mean the user guide is one such place. It's that document is, you know, open source, so in principle, you know, anyone can contribute to it, although since it's under version control on LIGO.org, that, and you know, that's a an issue for people who aren't LIGO members.
Yeah, so this is clearly a broader discussion point. I think that, as Leo points out, we can certainly help with putting such information into our documentation. But we've been pretty careful to draw the line between the gravitational wave side and the electromagnetic and other messenger side. So this is, to some extent, a community question, how to capture and how to evolve such things. I guess, let me encourage continued discussion on the list about it. I suspect this is way broader than just gravitational wave events and searches, and probably has a lot of implications for next generation transient surveys, not to mention current generation transient surveys. And I think, as Leo points out, we can certainly, as we see some consensus develop, we can certainly add some documentation to in our documentation that sort of suggests the type of way that is good to make that information more accessible. So we can do that on our side. But I encourage people to continue to look at that email thread. And if there are suggestions or other things, please do use the list to communicate on them. Also, suggestions on how we might organize to actually capture that in the broader sense is a good question. Okay. So I think we're 4 minutes before the top of the hour. I don't see any additional questions in the window. Again, thanks everyone for joining. We will attempt to keep up the schedule of doing these once a month. I suspect that the information content will become sort of less urgent in what we're trying to communicate, but we'll try and do that so that we do keep you informed, and especially as perhaps publication plans evolve for us. Please mute.
User disconnected from your channel.